Fantasy Six-Pack Hour with your hosts, Joe Bob and AJ Appleton.
Welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net. With me, and finally, his camera is working. He figured it out. Mr. AJ Ebelgarth. What is up, man? I know. Yes. It's low clap, man.
I deserve it. I figured some things out, I guess.
No, it's good, man. So tonight, we're going to be getting into our position previews, and we're going to be starting with our catcher and first base position, like we always do every year. Before we jump into that, though, just want to let everybody know we have subscriptions, memberships available on Fantasy Six Pack. Go there now, fantasysixpack.net/plans. You get our award-winning rankings. You get our draft cheat sheets, which I've actually recorded tutorials for on this YouTube channel. So go ahead and check those out and subscribe, by the way. We get DFS projections. You've got betting advice, more. All the different sports, not just baseball. So we'll have football stuff rolling out as, you know, as the season gets closer as well. Basketball, hockey, golf. It's all there. All at your fingertips for a low, low price there. But if you want to save even more, use promo code F6PMLB for 15% off. And yeah, go ahead and do that. And then, guys, it is time. It is time for you to move your leagues to Fantrax. I'm telling you guys, like, we've been saying this for years, and I feel like not enough of you have done it. There's no reason not to move your league over to Fantrax. There's really not. Like, you get the most customizations. You get very deep player pools. The leagues are, by the way, your league is open all year round, which is phenomenal. Like, it's great, especially if you're in a dynasty or keeper league. You have to have it. You know, no downtime for, you know, like the 2 week maintenance period that some of these other sites do. It's silly. Just jump over, reap all the benefits of the full customizations you get from Fantrax. They're free. There's a few, you know, pay for options, but I've really never needed those. So, Jason, that retro intro, that is Davis Peng. He made that one and our football intro as well, which is phenomenal. But, AJ, I'm sure you agree, man. You got to jump out of Fantrax, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm past the days of Yahoo. I never really liked their baseball platform as it is anyways. Fantrax, just on top of the news, I mean, there's just so much information. There's so many players into the player pool. And the best part about it, too, if there isn't a player that you think should be in the player pool, you send him an email and in there like
the next day.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Yeah.
I'll get alerts every once in a while like, this player was added to the player pool. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And you know, like, that's those like deep, deep dynasty players getting those players added. You know it is.
And that, that's got Michael what it Schneider was. Hit, that's how I found that out. Sure. So. Yeah, I had a dynasty league that I was in a few years back, and that was my first like Fantrax league. And ever since then, I've just always been going back.
I won't start a league anywhere else. It just doesn't make any sense. But go ahead, and if you haven't done it yet, jump over there, fantrax.com/fantasysixpack, and sign up for your free league now. And you're not going to regret it. You're not going to want to go back to where you were, I promise. So, all right, man. So, unfortunately, our guest is not able to drink tonight. So, we're just going to do Beer of the Week without him. But we'll bring him in just a second. But let's do this.
Beer.
All right, AJ, what do you got?
So, my beer is actually a plant. His name is Herb. Let me turn this the right way. Just kidding. It's hops. this is a freshie that I got from State Line Liquors, and it is from RAR Brewing in Cambridge, Maryland, out by, on the way to the Ocean City and the beaches and stuff. But this is their West Coast Double IPA, and it is phenomenal. It is so good. It, I mean, to me, it's not like super dank because I know you're not into that, but it's got bite. It's clean. It's just very good.
Cool. By the way, I finally saw that State Line Liquors. We actually stopped on the way back from Philly a couple weeks
ago.
We stopped at the Wawa there for lunch on the way back, and I was like, yeah. Oh, I think that's the spot.
That's the spot.
That's the good spot. All right. Anyway, so I'm drinking an other half. I picked one of these up for the Super Bowl 7th anniversary. Actually, I wrote DIPA. I realized it's a triple IPA.
Yeah.
My bad.
I was looking at those too. There's the 7th, the 8th.
They have like a multiple 7th anniversaries, but this is the one I picked up for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. It's got Cashmere, Citra, Matsueka, Ruaca, Equinot, Citra, all of them. It's good. I gave this one a 4.75. This is super good and super dangerous because it's that good, because it's a 10%er. And so when it's that good, that's scary. But cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Let's finally get to our guest. He's been waiting in the wings long enough. Mr. Eric Cross, what is going on, man? FTN, just now, Roto Baller, you are the man, dude. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Sorry I couldn't drink. I'm battling a bout of COVID right now, so drinking probably isn't the best thing to be doing at the current
point
in time.
Not a wise choice. So,
but just to get, add a little something here. I live in right outside of Portland, Maine. There is a lot of, like, Portland, Maine, I think, was ranked, I believe, second in the nation. I think behind, I want to say it was like someplace out in Oregon, like Bend, Oregon, or something like that,
for
breweries per capita or whatever the metric was. So, yeah, there's a lot of breweries in the greater Portland area. Even I grew up in a town about 15 minutes up the coast from Portland, a town of about 7,000 people, and we have four breweries in that town alone. So there's a lot of good beer in the greater Portland, Maine area.
And all that stuff up there, man. That stuff is phenomenal.
A lot of good beer, a lot of good IPAs, a lot of good local breweries. Yeah, it's if you like beer, it's a good good food scene, good music scene, good beer scene. So yeah, Portland's a great town.
That's awesome, man. I did not realize you were way up there. That's a good place to be if you like some beer. So
it sure is.
All right, what, AJ?
I
thought you were going to say something.
Yes. No.
Yeah, Jason just visited Portland in October, and it was awesome.
There you go.
Absolutely. All right, man. So we're going to be jumping into our catchers and our first base preview. We combine these two. It kind of fit naturally, maybe less so recently, but, back in the day, there were so many catchers that just turned into first baseman or played both positions. You still sort of get it, not as much as we used to see, but it's still kind of there. But let's start off with catchers. And, I feel like, we got to ask this question every year, because I'm just always curious about what our guest thinks that we have on. And it's about the difference between, like, single catcher and two catcher leagues. And, I think in single catcher leagues, it's typically kind of wait and see, just kind of play the board. If somebody drops super far, then fine, you take him. But you're sort of just going to figure it out, right? Most people don't reach for a catcher in a single catcher league. But in two catcher leagues, your NFBCs, they just live and die by it, right? There's a bunch of places that still do it and a bunch of leagues that still do it, right? What's your strategy? How does it change for a two-catcher league?
That's funny. I was just in a two-catcher mock draft earlier tonight that we just finished. It was a fast draft, so I already finished that. But yeah, two-catcher leagues, man. Like, I was, I obviously grew up, when I was started playing fantasy baseball in, high school and whatnot. It was all single-catcher leagues. It was kind of like, kickers in football. You, wait to the last round, right?
Yeah.
Last round or two, take your catch. Especially, I think you can still do that. It's still viable.
It's almost like tight strategy end at that point, right?
Yeah, it's like, especially if you're football. Like a 12-team one catcher league, you can wait because you can still get a guy like a Danny Jansen or Logan O'Hoppe or something super late if you wait to the last round. But yeah, these two catcher NFBC formats or the DCs, you gotta jump early. That's why you'll see like JT Realmuto go you know, back end second round sometimes. I've seen them hopping in the second. So definitely pushes guys way up the board, because there's always that fear of, you know, if you wait too long, then you get stuck with like a pairing of, I don't know, Joey Bart and Max Stassi or something like that. And that's just going to be, you know, maybe not a zero, but it's going to put you behind the eight ball at that position. So I don't usually like to go super early on both of them in those formats, but I try to make it a point to get my first catcher by, you know, pick 120 to 130. That's like the Tyler Stevenson-ish range, where after that it really starts falling off quickly. So I want to make sure at least I have one guy that I feel good about, and then maybe I'll still wait on the second guy and get like a Joey Bart or something like that. But definitely got to push those guys up the draft boards in two catcher formats a pretty good amount.
Do you typically reach for one of the top guys, like the Will Smiths, the Real Mutos, those guys?
You know, I actually have gotten a few. I've done, I think, five or six DCs so far this year already. And I think I got one share of Ryu Muto. I have one share of Will Smith. And I might have a share of Adley. I can't remember. So I have found myself, it wasn't like a huge reach. Like I got Ryu Muto, I think pick 35-ish, give or take. It was like early part of the third. So I didn't feel too bad about that, given what he brings to the table. Will Smith, just super solid, right? Like, he's not as flashy as JT, but solid four category guy in the middle of that Dodgers lineup. And Adley obviously has the upside. And Dalton Varsho is a guy that can, you know, obviously give you that 25-15 blend. So I'm not opposed to reaching for one of those guys. I wouldn't necessarily reach for someone like, even though I like him, like a Wilson Contreras or something like that. Like Wilson, I think he's actually a decent value in two catcher formats. I think he's going around pick 100 or 105 or so. But if I was to reach, I'd rather like, all right, if I'm going to reach, I'm going to reach for one of these elite guys within the top 50, and then boom, I have that spot taken care of, so I don't have to worry about it for a little bit until I get that second guy.
Yeah,
nice.
You know, it's the DCs. Those are best balls. They're hold draft and holds.
They're draft and holds, but you have two. You have biweekly lineups. You have Monday and Friday lineup changes.
You still got to set your lineup.
Yeah. But so you still the no. No fab, no transactions, no trades. But yeah, you set your lineup twice a week.
I feel like in those formats, especially if they're two catcher, getting at least one good catcher is super valuable.
Yeah.
Don't want to give my secrets away, but I guess I'm going to. That's why I do the show, right? Everybody's got to learn. In wrestling, you know, they do the best ball, better ball, what they want to call it, right? They got the two waiver periods, but getting that top-notch catcher every year, at least one, has really propelled me to success in that format. It's one less thing you like. You have it means you have one less hole that you know. People that wait on catcher in those leagues, they're literally getting no points a lot of weeks from their catchers. To where I'm always at least guaranteed one of those guys getting me something. So, like, last year I had, like, Will Smith. The year before, I don't know, I forget. But I always go after one of those guys, and it's paid off very, very well for me. So, in those leagues, I push up catchers quite a bit. So, especially when it's two catchers. If it was one, I'd probably wait a little bit. But, anyway, moving on.
All right. Well, so you mentioned a couple of these names already here, but new young blood is the go-to, it seems like, at the catcher position, and these guys are just rising up the ranks. You know, we're talking about Alejandro Kirk, Rutschman, who you mentioned, and MJ Melendez. Who of these guys do you prefer for this season in redraft, and why?
I like all three in general, but if I had to pick one, I would go Adley. I think he is the safest of the three. Though Kirk is fairly safe too, I'll give him that. But at the same time, you know, with them recently acquiring Brandon Belt, I think that eats into Kirk's at bats just a little bit. Obviously, Danny Jansen's there, so maybe it won't cost him more than 50 or 60 at bats over a full season. But at the same time, that's for catchers. That's a good amount.
That's
so
I'm a
big Kirk guy. Like, I call him my little bowling ball. He just is like this little little pint sized bowling ball of hitting ability. So I do love Kirk, and I've come around to Melendez. I was a bit lower on him, that 2019 he had in high A where he hit like 189 or whatever it was. Like, that stuck in my head for a long time, but the metrics are actually pretty solid with him. So in general, I do like all three. And I think they're fine where they're going ADP, but Adley, I think, is like, he's the real deal. You saw it, like, once he, you know, there's a little bit of an adjustment period. You know, heaven forbid a prospect takes a little bit of time to adjust, right? But once he did, I know, right? That's it's so crazy to think about. But once he did kind of, you know, get settled in as a full-time catcher, like, he was catching all the time for Baltimore, and he was one of the best catchers in the league for the last, like, 2.5 months or whatever of the season or whatever it was. So, yeah, he's not going to run, obviously, so he's not like a Realmuto or even like a Dalton Varsho, but I think this is a guy that's really, really good four-category guy. Hits for high average, high OBP, you know, 20, 25 home runs, maybe even flirts for 30 some years. I think that Baltimore lineup's going to be pretty solid as well. Just a really good four-category guy, and I'm surprised he's actually not going higher than he is, given that the huge prospect name that he had, plus, you know, his good end of the season too. So I think he's actually a pretty solid value where he's going. So I'll definitely be willing to invest him a good amount this year.
Yeah, definitely a fan of Rushman. Living in Maryland, obviously, I get to see him play
nice.
Much more than most people, I would say. But yeah, he was the next coming, and he's proven, you know, his worth as the hype train that he had coming out. So
yeah,
I'm definitely on board with him. I like Kirk as well. You know, obviously a little bit more of a later flyer for me if I'm looking to just kind of punt catcher for the, you know, the first handful of rounds at least. He's kind of my main target as teams start drafting catchers and as that run starts forming. I'm hoping that, you know, I don't get on the wrong end of that and not be able to grab him.
Yeah.
Do you like any of these guys specifically?
I think Rushman, I agree with Eric, like Rush and you guys, like, I think Rushman is the guy you want out of these three, but he is going to cost you a pretty penny. And I actually agree with Eric. I think his ADP is going to start going up. People are going to start catching up, and, you know, they're going to see this ADP of 62 on average right now. They're going to go, well, Aldous reached from a 58. It's just going to start climbing, right? You're just going to see it because everybody wants him, right?
Especially if he performs well in the spring. Absolutely. Yeah, you can see that definitely rise.
The guy that I, out of the next two, I really like Kirk more. Melendez is phenomenal. He's a much better, in my opinion, like head-to-head categories guy, like, because his batting average throughout the season is going to kill you. And in a head-to-head weekly league, like, you can deal with, you know, the small sample size at times of Melendez just crushing your batting average. Kirk's just has pretty much just as much power, if not more, and has a far better batting average. So, like, he's the better player, and they're going about at the same time. So give me Kirk over Melendez, especially in a roto league. So, but let's move over to not the new young players, but guys that are in new locations. And we had a lot of catcher movement this offseason, which is seems bizarre. Like, I don't track that kind of stuff, but I was just like, why is every catcher being traded? Just, and good catchers at that, happening. Right? Sean Murphy's in Atlanta now. William Contreras is in Milwaukee, and his brother Wilson Contreras is in St. Louis now. So out of these three, you know, kind of the same question, like, who are you targeting more given their ADPs, and it does everything in you know, in play here?
Man, again, I like all three. It's weird.
Yeah, me too.
I was never a huge Sean Murphy guy, but now that he's out of that spacious, whatever they, I don't know, they, is it O.co Coliseum still? I don't even know what they call it out there anymore.
I don't think it is, actually. It was.
A lot of these ballparks change their names so often now. It's hard to keep up anymore.
Yeah.
I still think of them as like Safeco Field and, you know, the Kingdome and stuff like that. But anyway, but now that he's in Atlanta, you know, I think he's going to play regularly. I don't think Theriault is going to you know, eat into his at bats too much. Obviously, Atlanta's a great lineup, so I like him there. I think out of these three, the biggest value boost might have even been William Contreras, who obviously was in that same deal going from Atlanta up to Milwaukee, where he's going to, you know, catch primarily there, also get some time at DH as well. It's the Ring Central Coliseum. Yeah. Is that what you
just looked it up? I was waiting for a pause to just be like, it's Ring Central.
I didn't want to cut you off. I wanted, like, what? Okay.
Sure. I don't even, what is Ring Central? We're just going to go with that. Is it like a doorbell company? I don't even know.
It is. Ring is the doorbell thing. So Ring Central, is it related?
I don't know.
I have no idea. No idea. Right, this is like some of these random commercial ads. You're like, who is this company?
I don't know. Yeah, that was never even heard of that. I thought it was still O.co, but yeah, totally wrong. But where were we? Oh yeah, William Contreras. I love William Contreras. Like, the quality of contact, very, very good last year. Hard hit rates, barrel rates, and the fact that he still had 20 home runs and under 400 plate appearances, even given he had a bit higher of a ground ball rate. I think the average will come down. He's not, I think he hit 278. He's not that type of guy. He's more like a 255, 260 guy, which is still pretty solid in this day and age, especially for catcher. So I think he's going to be a guy that if he gets the power that he can get to and push 30 home runs with, you know, maybe 90-plus RBI, 70-plus runs scored, I think he's a leapfrog his brother and get into that back-end tier one where he's a guy that could be, you know, a guy that we're talking about near pick 60 next year. I think he's got that type of upside. So I guess even though I like all three of these guys, it's weird how many catchers I like this year. I don't like that. It feels weird, but I do love William. Out of these three, give me William. Like, Wilson's super, you know, consistent. He's been maybe the most consistent catcher. I think I actually wrote him up not too long ago on FTN that he was only him and JT Realmuto had finished in the top 20, 125 overall on the Razzball Player Rater each of the last 6 years. So, super consistent guy, but give me William here. I think he's have a really big year.
Yeah. So Ring Central is a they provide businesses with a
screw baseball
cloud-based business communication solutions. It includes messaging, video, and phone. I'm not getting paid for this, but I should.
I was just going to say, is this an ad?
The best part about them is that their CEO is Vlad Shmininis. And their CTO is Vlad Vindrow. So,
bunch of Vlads running that place, I guess.
It's like the office with Bob and Bop, but it's Vlad and Vlad.
Nice.
Now that I think about it, Vlad is the Bob of Russia.
They better be Blue Jay fans.
Maybe. We'll see. Are we talking about him in first base? I don't know. We're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Like, if you look at consensus ADP for these guys, like, they are going back to back to back right now.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, that's drastically different if you look at different sites. But like, the consensus right now is Contreras, Murphy, Contreras, and then there's like a massive gap between him and Tyler, between them and Tyler Stevenson.
Yeah, it's probably about like 30
that's like
or
the
so
cutoff.
Picks.
Number 10 is like the cutoff. Yeah. But the fact that there actually are 10 catchers that were all going, I can live with that. It means we're all going to wait in our drafts, like especially in our home leagues, right? At the end of March, and we're going to go, we're all going to wait and see. And then those last guys are just going to be like, oh, I can't wait anymore. They're going to go way earlier. They're going to be like, damn it. Yeah. Everybody knows you're waiting. And then you're going to
screw this up.
Yeah. Then you're going to get stuck having a pick between the rest. And at that point, I'm out. I'm just waiting for the. I'm waiting till the end at that point. Yeah. Who cares? But, I mean, it's so hard to pick from these guys. I think everything you said, Eric, is pretty spot on. So I think we can just move on.
All right. Yeah. Of the three, I'm a fan of Murphy, just to throw that out there, because when I guess he was playing in O.co or Ring Central or just the Oakland Coliseum,
he was so
stupid. He still was so good. So I like him coming to Atlanta. I'm excited to see what he can do down there. But either way, so fast forwarding a bit, I mean, looking into the later rounds of the drafts here, who's a guy going later that you think is going to be a great target for your leagues or anybody's leagues in redraft, even in a single catcher league.
Yeah, no, I have a guy that I've been going to a lot in this type of scenario. He's going around, pick 250, give or take, though. His ADP has begun creeping up. Logan Ohapi from the Los Angeles Angels, even that's a rookie catcher who has grand total of 5 major league games under his belt. But I saw Ohapi out in the Arizona Fall League in 2021. He was legit there, played very well both sides of the ball. And then he had a, you know, he started breaking out in that 2021 year and then got up to was a double A the entire year. 2022 in the Phillies and Angels systems, came over in that deal for Brandon Marsh, which is a pretty solid deal for both teams.
Yeah.
And overall slash 283, 416, 544, had 26 bombs in 104 games. Even, you know, he could steal a bag or two here and there, had 7 steals and almost as many walks to strikeout, 70 walks to 74 Ks in just 447 plate appearances. So he's one where, you know, the contact, the approach, the power, he's a solid all-around catcher. Like, I don't see any reason why he's not going to stick behind the plate long-term and, you know, in a starter's capacity. So he's a guy, if I'm one where I wait and, you know, all the names through, you know, through that Stevenson, Cal Raleigh range are all gone, and he's one, I'm like, all right, let me just wait to the last round and in your single catcher formats. You know, Logan Ohapi is a name I like a lot. You know, Gabriel Moreno a bit too. Like, the dude's a hit for average. Like, there's doubt in my mind.
Kind of who I was looking
he's
at.
He's a hit for That's average. That's a good one. I just wonder where the power is at. Like, there's some raw power in the profile, but it's kind of gone by the wayside the last couple of years in the upper minors and the majors, where he's hitting too many ground balls. And he's putting a lot of balls in the gap and whatnot, but this isn't really getting that loft on it that we saw from him in the lower minors. So, you know, I think maybe he turns into what we thought Kiber Ruiz was going to be. That didn't really pan out, where it's like, all right, high average. Maybe he gets like 10, 12 home runs. But now that he's in Arizona, much clearer path to playing time out there than he had in Toronto. That was just a glutton of catchers they had there. So now that he's in Arizona, much clearer path. Carson Kelly can't stay healthy at the time. So I think he's going to have a nice year as well. So if you just want a guy that we're like, all right, he's a get me average, I know that. Mm-hmm. And you know, any power he adds is just kind of gravy. If that's what you're looking for, just a guy that can give you some average. Moreno's a pretty solid target too.
Yeah, I'm definitely in on Ohapi as well. Being a Phillies fan, you know, I'm used to him. I was a little disappointed that they traded him, but, you know, it worked out, like you said, for both teams. And I do like Marsh coming in. We desperately needed a center fielder. So,
yeah, you did, for sure.
It was okay. I was hoping that they would be able to get something in that position, but, you know, they had to give up a prospect, and it worked out. So I'm okay with it.
The one guy and again, there's a lot of risk here. He's not a young guy at all, but Grandal, like, I mean, once you start getting down that far in the catcher ranks, like, I mean, take a stab at somebody, right? Because there will be somebody that pops up on the waiver wire at some point, so you can replace him. Right. It happens every year, especially in catcher, right? So, like, if you miss on everybody, Grandal has as much upside as anybody down there, if not more. Maybe outside of a hope, like Ohapi. It's just he's just been injured, you know, so much the last few seasons. So it's tough to trust. But if you get down that far, I feel like he's somebody that I would probably take a stab at and figure why not.
Yeah, I mean, again, why not? He's shown that he can do it before. Yeah, last year was atrocious for him.
Yes,
on many levels, but he's, you know, 1 year removed from 2021, where he had an OBP over 400, a slug over 500, and he was one of the best hitters in the league in the second half of the year. Like, everyone looking at what certain guys were doing, and he was right up there with some bigger names, and it was kind of surprising to see that. So he's a guy that he's had good years. He had a top 20 MVP finish back in 2019 over when he was in Milwaukee, but it's a guy that has shown you that he can do it in the past, and I don't think he's completely just done age 33. So he's a guy that if you want to take a stab on someone that has at least shown you that he can do it, as opposed to like a Moreno that has not shown you that yet, that could. But yeah, he's a solid target as well.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that he is, you said 33, he's actually 34. I just found out. I thought he was 33 also. But the problem is that he is that old. And so you're going to probably not get as many starts out of him. You know, maybe they rest him an extra day or two here and there. And, you know, he's not going to slide over to first base like some of these other catchers would, because they got Vaughn and some other guys that can do it. So, you know.
Right.
But he's still, like, again, we're talking late round targets. And so at that point, you're just, you're trying to get anything that's not like a total zero. And he can easily do it, in my opinion. So,
yeah.
All right. I think we should jump into first base. You know, I look at the first base position, and honestly, I see kind of like catcher, where it's like, I like a lot of these guys, but I also not sure I really like a lot of these guys. Like, you know, it feels deep, but they also just, after the top, what, five, six, maybe, if you want to go that far, they all feel kind of the same. So give me your strategy going into drafts with first base. You know, are you, you need to get one of these top guys, or are you okay with, I don't know, Breeze Hoskins, Christian Walker as your starting first baseman?
I'm actually okay with that range. And, you know, I have not gotten a lot of shares, or I don't think any shares of, I have no shares of Vlad. I have no shares of Freeman. I might have one of Alonso, but that's it. Like, I have not been targeting, even though I like Alonso, I like Freeman, I like Goldie. Obviously, Vlad's great. But there's other, usually other spots I'm trying to go at. I liked getting more speed in, you know, my first couple of picks, getting those power speed guys. And maybe, yep, I'm trying to get a third baseman, because that one dries up really bad.
Yeah.
Once you get in the middle rounds, even more so than first base does. So I just haven't been going after those elite guys. So it's really that, you know, that tier that's right around like pick 90 to like 130 or so, that I've kind of been targeting pretty heavily. Like, it starts with Vinny P. I know we'll get into him a little bit here, but I've been going after him a lot. Jose Abreu, obviously in Houston, I think that's a great fit for him. I've gotten a share or two of him. I've gotten a couple of shares of Nathaniel Lowe as well. Reese Hoskins, I think, is fine. Christian Walker, Andrew Vaughn, Ryan Mountcastle, I think they're all, you know, they're back end first baseman, but I'm okay with having them as my starters. So in general, I've actually been waiting a little bit at this position, and so that, you know, 100-150 range where a lot of these guys are going. Even like an Anthony Rizzo, that left-handed power in Yankee Stadium is pretty solid as well. So again, like, am I ecstatic that, you know, my starter might be a Christian Walker? No, I'm not, like, you know, running home and tell my parents, I just drafted Christian Walker. But at the same time, like, he's fine. You know, these,
so
these guys,
in the pool of 2021, man.
Right? Like, these guys are fine. So, yeah, I just, the way I've been kind of approaching my draft from a positional standpoint, this is the one where I've been waiting a little bit to those middle rounds. So I think the targets are actually okay there.
Yeah, I personally agree. I'm probably going to wait on first base. You know, I get that the Freeman and the Guerreros and the Alonzos, they are a tier on their own. You know, you can throw Goldschmidt up there, Olsen maybe, and Abreu the next tier. But, like, once you get past that, like, a lot of these guys are kind of the same, so you can kind of just wait. You're really not going to get burned by not taking, you know, the first baseman right after that, you know, top tier or two. Because the guys after that, they're all kind of the same. You're either going to get a mix of power, you know, maybe a little bit of speed, maybe moderate power and good average, or just like high power, low average. That's kind of all that they work. You could fit them into your team at that point. You could figure out what your team needs and draft your first baseman around that, because you have so much of your core built, you know, and hopefully, because as you said, Eric, you know, speed isn't really a thing for first base, right? And so you want to get those power speed guys earlier on. And Freeman and Guerrero and Alonso, as amazing as they are, they're not giving you that, right? They're not giving you speed. Right. So no. Go get those guys early and then wait and get some of the same power numbers from those guys. Maybe less average. Well, not maybe, but yes, less average. But similar power numbers for far cheaper. And that's how I play first base, and I've done it for years. I've only drafted one of the top first basemen like a a few times in the last couple of years, in the last like, probably 5-6 years actually. That is a tried and true strategy for first base that does not seem to be going away anytime soon.
No, I mean, the nice thing with first base, and especially in leagues where you have a corner infield spot.
Oh, Dave, he's an idiot.
What? I didn't.
Eric, will you be my Valentine?
You're about 2 days too late on that, Dave. There.
Yeah. Anyway, as I was saying, before I was so rudely interrupted, Dave.
I'm allowed to interrupt you. You're not the guest, AJ.
I was talking about Dave. Anyway, Dave, I love you. I'll be your Valentine. There's just more power to go around, like, through first base. So if you're playing in a league where you have just your standard positions, I feel like you can, you know, you're better off going towards third base earlier, and then hitting first base towards those middle rounds. When you have corner infield, I still think I follow the same way. I mean, I'd maybe be jumping into first base a little more often because that's probably who I'm plugging into my corner outfield spot. Just based on the fact that you have more guys that are going to be projected for 20 plus homers, you know, in solid RBI numbers. So that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, Eric said, third base dries up quickly, and it's a position you don't really want to go after. You don't want any part. We'll get into that in a couple weeks, guys. But it is, third base is rough.
It is rough. So. All right, so we've already mentioned these names a little bit here, and that's Mr. Freddie Freeman, who is going into a 33-year season, I guess. Paul Goldschmidt, one of my all-time favorites until he burned me, 35. Obviously, these guys are you know, well into their 30s for baseball terms, but do you think we can continue to count on them as a top-tier option for the first base, or are we going to start worrying about this age catching up on them, pass on them in drafts?
With Freddie, I have absolutely zero issue taking him this year. Like, if I were to take a first baseman, like I've talked about him, he's so incredibly, like, he might be the most consistent guy. It's like him or like Mookie Betts. Like, those are like the two that are the super, and then on the same team.
Like,
super unfair. Though they weren't on the same team 3 years ago, but Boston and Atlanta. But Freddie Freeman, he's just shown that super consistent. You look at the metrics with him, like nothing's fallen off anywhere. Yeah, the barrel rate went down a little bit this past year, but that's it. Like, the XBA was still well over 300. The approach is still really good. Like, I'm not worried at all about Freeman. And I'm not even, Goldie's a couple years older, 35, had that, nice, huge resurgent year last year. Yeah. You know, do I think he's going to do a, 317 average with 35 and 115 again? Maybe not, but same time, I'm not worried about him falling off a cliff either. Like, even before the past couple years, like, the metrics were still really good. Like, it was kind of surprising that the surface stats had tailed off a little bit. But not even too much. Like, that 1 year he hit 260 back in 2019. But outside of that, he's been above 290 every other year dating back to, you have to go back to 2012, which is his first full year back in Arizona, where he still hit 286. So it's just how consistent these guys are. And like, with these older guys, I like to look into the metrics even. Obviously, I do it for everybody. But like, all right, do I see anything that could signal any type of, the beginning of a decline? I really just don't see it with Goldschmidt. He's still, striking out at a low rate, still walking, still hitting the ball hard, still even running a little bit, 7 steals last year, which is still encouraging.
Yeah.
So, I don't think, maybe, 2024 or 5, maybe, that those decline starts coming. But for 2023, if I was to draft first baseman early, I have no issue with taking either of these two guys.
I think the one thing I'll say about Goldschmidt is that don't draft him. Trade for him at the end of April when all of his owners are super frustrated because he can't hit the damn ball. right? One home run last year in March and April combined. Three home runs the year prior. In fact, he only hit three home runs in May and April, both months in 2021. So, like, I feel like the last 2 years we've been like, what's wrong with Goldschmidt? And then it just boom, just explodes and hits over 30 on both years. You're like,
never mind. That's what was right. I saying?
Nothing's wrong with Paul Goldschmidt. He's still a stud. But we do it every year, it feels like. But yeah, he's fine. I mean, I guess that would be the only thing that sort of makes me worry about him more is like he is starting off slow now. And so like, when's that slow start gonna just keep going longer and longer and longer? That's the only thing he's sort of worried about. But I mean, like, everything is there.
It's funny with him. I was just pulling up his career splits, and May, June, July, August, first career, all above 300. But it's the two bookend months to start the year, end the year, yeah, and it's not even bad. It's March / April, 276 average, and then same thing in September / October. And those are the only 2 months where he has a slug under 500 as well. Where he has him above 500 all the other 4 months. So, again, not like terrible, but yeah, it's weird how kind of like the start of the year and end of the year, just a little bit not quite as good as the middle 4 months for him. Yeah.
Do you worry at all though with Freeman? Not because, like, I mean, the run and the RBI and the average are obviously top notch, but you know, I feel like from first base, right, that's a position where you sort of feel like you can count on power.
Yeah.
For most of your players. And he did drop. Now, two out of the last 3 years, 13 home run. Now granted, that was a 60 game season. But last year was 21. Any sort of concern there?
No, not at all, really. Like, so the hard hit rate was still 48%. And the fact that he's only 21, which isn't super elite, especially for this position. But he did add 13 steals to kind of counteract that a little bit. So
it did help.
Yeah, so he's obviously never been like a huge power guy. Like, what's his? I think he's had a couple years of 30. He had 2 years over 30, 3 years over 30, excuse me, including 2021 where he had 31. So I don't see why he can't get back up there when he's so, like, he's elite in three categories, excuse me, average, runs, and RBI. He's a guy that you can basically pencil in for 100 of each runs in RBI. He has 117 last year, 120 runs for that. Yeah, I think he's, you know, mid-20s home run guy. He had 8 steals in 2021, 13 this past year, 10 back in 2018. So he's always chipped in, like, you know, 5 to 10 and even 13 last year. So, and maybe he'll get the 15, 16 this year, bigger bases, the pickoff restrictions. Who knows?
Like, never know. You see him get
15. I won't put that out of possibility. He's not like super fast, but he's just one of the smartest baseball players I think we've ever seen. So I think that obviously, like, Pujols was never fast either, but he always stole a little bit, you know, stole some bags until the foot issues later in his career, because he was super smart. He was never fast. He was a super smart. So that obviously plays into base running more so than speed sometimes does. So yeah, I'm not worried about Freeman at all.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So
I agree.
Moving over here to your boy. And it's funny, 'cause we had our chats before the show and I didn't see your comment that you really wanted to talk about him, but I put him on the sheet anyway, so perfect. Vinny Pascutino. Dude, he's getting a lot of love in drafts, and obviously you're a fan, as you wanted to talk about him, or at least I'm guessing that's why you want to talk about him. But, you know, I get that he's a really good player, really good pedigree. Top 100 ADP feels a little strong, possibly. I mean, and I'm just going to give you a few stats, right? So, I mean, last season, you know, first call up, right? 10 home runs, 25 runs, 27 RBI in 258 at bats. Clearly, the batting average, 295, was amazing. You know, but you extrapolate that over to 600 at bats, right? 23 home runs, 58 runs, and 60 RBI. I don't know if that's really worth top 100. I mean, I think we all think improvement would be coming, but is it enough to warrant a top 100 ADP?
Yeah, I think it is, to be honest with you. I think that Kansas City lineup is just to keep getting better. You know, another step forward from Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez. So I think that lineup is going to be, you know, it's not going to be great, obviously, but I think it could be like a sneaky middle of the pack lineup. You know, maybe it's like 15th to 20th and run scored, something like that. So I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was last year. Let's say that. So I think you could see him get up over 80 RBI, you know, 70 plus runs scored. But I think what's really going to stand out is the average. I think he's definitely a 280 plus hitter, which is almost like, you know, the new, I think 280 is the new 300 these days. Obviously averages have been coming down the last, you know, really half decade or even more. So I think he's an elite batting average guy. Like, he already proved that. Like, in his debut as a rookie, he had a 289 XBA, more walks than strikeouts, 11.7% walk rate to 11.4% strikeout rate, 90.4% zone contact rate, only a 15.3% whiff rate, and all these are like well above league average marks. So I think he's already established himself as one of the best pure hitters, not just at this position, but in baseball right off the bat. You know, and the quality of contact was good as well. 91.2 average exit velo, right under a 113 max, 76 X slug, 47% hard hit rate. And I think he's going to be a guy that 25 to 30 home runs. He could throw it for 300. I think he's going to have a better year than like Matt Olson. I think that's, you know, I actually have him ranked ahead of Matt Olson in my rankings. I think he's going to be that good. You know, so 30 home runs, 80 plus RBI, 280 plus average, you know, 75 or so runs scored. He won't give you any speed. He's not that type of guy, but I think he's going to be a really good four category guy.
That would be quite the jump for Pasquantino if he hit 30.
I think he could. I think he could flirt with 30. I really do think he could get with 30 up there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Again, I think the pedigree is there. It's just, I don't typically reach out for massive jumps quite like that without seeing.
That's fair. That's fair.
But, you know, it's you. If you were in a league with me, you are getting Pasquantino way ahead of me. I guarantee you that. And I'll take Matt Olson instead. But, no, I think he's good. It's still just, you kind of want to see it. You know, he just never know with that Royals lineup, man. Like, dude, if it's, I agree, it's going to be better. But how much better to where the counting stats are going to be able to carry him to jump up to the level where you want it to be to draft him where he's going. That's kind of my issue with him.
And that's fair. I can see why people would be, you know, kind of shying away from a, you know, he's not a rookie technically anymore, but he'll be his first full year. So I still kind of lump him under like the rookie umbrella. And I can see, you know, the lineup isn't the greatest. And so, yeah, those are valid concerns. I just look at the metrics. I've seen this guy's just mashed everywhere he's gone. He's shown the big power, like, you know, 300 plus ISO, 600 plus slugs in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kaufman, is it still called Kaufman? I think that one still is Kaufman.
I think they have pretty, not changed. You are
pretty sure that's still Kaufman for now at least. But yeah, obviously that's not the greatest place to hit. But I think he'll be just fine. So I'm okay with that ADP for him this year.
Yeah, I don't mind it where he's going. And again, you're looking at basically the projection of ceiling here. I mean, he's like the perfect up, you know, venturing up ceiling guy in my mind. You know what the floor is going to be, and it's serviceable. So
yeah,
I definitely am okay with that. And, you know, I'm not drafting him as my first baseman personally, but, you know, if he's going to fall into that corner infield for me or utility spot.
He won't. He's going in the top 100 completely. He's like the seventh or eighth first baseman off the board, dude.
That's so
you're
fine.
You're not getting him that far.
I would love to get him as my corner infielder.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I don't think that's
happening. You'd have to draft Freeman and Pasquantino in the first, like, six rounds. Good luck.
All right, fine. I'll do it. But
alrighty.
Yes. All right. So, speaking of other options who now I'm probably looking at, there's a lot more good players in these middle rounds. You know, you're talking Hoskins, CJ Krohn, Vaughn, you got Mountcastle, Cronenworth even. You know, those types of players. Who out of this group is someone that you like a enough to really go after and target.
You know, it's funny. I actually have, you know, a few shares of a lot of these guys. Like, I just got Christian Walker in a mock earlier tonight. I have a couple Vaughn shares. I have a Mountcastle share. I don't think I have a share of Crone or Hoskins, though. I do like Hoskins a good amount, too. I think he just kind of gets underrated because Hoskins is underrated, yeah. But he's just super consistent guy. Like, you look at, you know, each of the last four full, so let's just throw out the damn 2020 year, or even though, yes, he was on pace for more home runs than this in that year. He was on pace for about upper 30s that year. But 2018, 34 home runs, 96 RBI. 2019, 29 and 85 with mid-upper 80s runs both those years. 2020 was probably his worst year for counting stats over this stretch, 27 and 71 with 64 runs. And last year, 30 and 79 with 81 runs. I mean, you can just pencil him in for, like, you know, right around 30, right around like 80 to 90 in about 80 to 90 runs scored as well. The average won't, you know, the thing is, the average, it's not great, obviously. He's a career 242 guy, been 246, 247, 245 the last 3 years. That doesn't kill you anymore either.
But arguably, I think, also should go up with, like, you know, the defensive, you know, lack of shifts, right?
You think?
I don't know if he's been shifted on.
Let me look. He has been.
I did not look up.
I'm pulling it up right now. His shifted. So he was shifted against about 2/3 of the time last year, but his WOBA. With no shift versus the shift was basically the same. So, and that's kind of tracks the last couple of years. Yeah. I don't think it'll be a big difference for him, but he's in a good park. He's in a good lineup, obviously, especially when Harper gets back midseason sometime. Yeah. So I think he's like, if you want this guy that you can just plug in and forget about and you'll get your stats, you know, I think that guy is Rhys Hoskins. If you want to go a little bit more upside in that same range, you know, Andrew Vaughn, I think, is a pretty solid target. Now he's back to first base. He doesn't have old man La Russa falling asleep in the dugout and throwing him out in left field, where that was a disaster. Like, he's not a left fielder.
Jeff would love you for calling him that.
What was that?
He hates our old producer. Jeff would love you for making fun of La Russa. He hated him. He's a big White Sox fan.
I'm a big White Sox fan too. And I love
know. You told me that. Yeah.
But,
that's funny.
It all works out.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, but Vaughn, like, going back. Vaughn going back to first base, his natural position, where he played in the minors, where he played at the University of California, made him a, you know, top five overall pick back in 2018 or 19. I forget exactly which draft class he was in. But, yeah, I think he's a very good option at that range. A guy that's going to hit you 270, 280. Contact skills are there. Doesn't strike out a ton. Not a huge OBP guy. So if you play in that format, maybe you look elsewhere. He's never been a huge walk rate guy. But 25-plus home runs. I think this lineup is finally going to – they have obviously the pieces to have a pretty damn good lineup. If Eloy can stay healthy, if Robert can stay healthy, if Anderson can stay healthy, a lot of ifs, but there's a lot of talent in that lineup too, and Vaughn's right in the middle of that. So he's a good target there. Ryan Mountcastle too, a guy that I've never was like super high on Mountcastle, but I was digging into his profile recently, and like last year he had a 15% barrel rate, a 46.3% hard hit rate, 509 X slug, like pretty damn good. Just the ballpark, the quirky walls out there in Camden really limited him. Like, you looked at, he had
all of them,
probably 5, 6, 7 balls at least, given, you know, the weird outfield dimensions in left, the high wall and right, where he probably could have hit, like, he had what, 22 home runs, probably should have been like 28, 29. And that's not going to change obviously this year, but again, he's a guy that you can get you a 20-plus home runs, 80 to 90 RBI, solid enough average, I mean, with the upside for more. So I think he's a decent target, too. There's a lot of good targets in that range, honestly.
Yeah. AJ, you got anybody? Because I do if you don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm partial to Hoskins, but his downfall is just simply his streakiness. I mean, he'll go on these runs where he's so consistent, he's getting you everything you need and more, and then he just falls off, and you're like,
And that's more for like his, because I know AJ, you and I, you know, like you and I play in more head to head weekly type league. So the consistency matters to where, you know, if
Roto, I'm not worried about him at all.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get what you're going to get from him at the end of the season. I think the one problem with Reese too is like he still has yet to have a, you know, 100. Run 100 RBI season.
Yeah.
Either one. So that's interesting to note.
It is. And again, I think it's, I mean, he's been bounced around in the lineup a lot too. Last year was a little more consistent with his positioning in the lineup once Girardi was gone, thankfully, but you know, then Harper came back and, you know, there was a few tweaks here and there, but not much. I think this year is going to be interesting to see what happens with Turner being there, whether he's going to take on leadoff or if they're going to leave Schwarber there because he's comfortable and he was pretty damn productive. Obviously, his RBI numbers were down, but that's what's going to happen when you're a leadoff guy and you can mash the crap out of the ball.
Yeah, Jason and JP talked about that on our Phillies preview show that we have here on on the channel, and it was just sort of like, how the hell is Schwarber leading off with Turner there? But that's what's projected right now, and I mean, it makes sense. Schwarber crushes there, but whoo,
yeah,
it seems a little bizarre. Eric sounds like he wants to say something.
No, it's funny. Growing up, and I think we probably grew up roughly around the same time, where it's like, you never would have seen a guy like Kyle Schwarber lead off in the 90s, right? No. It was always like, you had your prototypical, it was like the Kenny Lofton types, where it's like, all right, they can put the ball in play, absolutely, they can get on base. They can wreak havoc on the path.
And then it's skinny, like, guys.
Then you saw like Schwarber leading, like I saw Judge leading off. I was like, these guys were like, guys, oh, you put them in the 3, 4, 5 spots and you forget about them. You get the speedy guys on top getting on base. It's kind of funny how the philosophy in general has changed, where you see a lot of different teams go with different philosophies, different strategies up top than you would have ever seen, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So you're seeing I like Schwarbs. I've always liked Schwarbs. He's a fun dude. Looks like he'd be fun to have a beer with, but he just does not look like a leadoff guy at all. It works, whatever.
I bet you in the next couple of years we will see it shift back to more of what we're used to, Eric and AJ, probably you too, because of the lack of the
probably
shift.
Me
more
too.
Guys are going to start getting
I'm older
base.
Than you.
I know. Shut up. I was trying to make you feel better.
I look younger now that I've shaved, but
now that you've shaved, absolutely. So before we get into our last one, I want to give you my guy. This is an interesting one, and you can get him really late, actually. Rowdy Tellez.
Yeah.
I think I just hit 35 bombs last year. Like, okay. And you want to talk about a guy who hits with the shift on? I mean, like, almost every at-bat was against the shift. It's insane. I mean, yeah, he had, like, 10 at-bats without the shift, and it was horrible results, but you have to expect his batting average to go up just slightly. I don't think he's going to be a batting average guy regardless, but it's going to go up from 219. He was 242 the year before that, 283 the year before that. But, I mean, the guy obviously can mash the ball. Playing in that great ballpark in Milwaukee can likely reproduce that power. And you can get him, you know, as the 14th, 15th first baseman off the board right now.
I like Rowdy a good amount. Thank you. Going back to like Alejandro Kirk, if Kirk was the first baseman, he'd look like Rowdy Tellez, like just a big, stout dude. Obviously, Tellez has a bit more power, obviously, but no, I agree too. Like, there's no, if you looked at the metrics and just didn't look at his average and you made a guess, it's like giving like contact rates, you know, walk K rates, whiff rates, stuff like that. Just looked at those, like, all right, I think this is going to be like a, you know, 250 ish hitter. I think he's 219. You're like, what? Because like
BABIP was 215. That's atrocious. Like it was
super unlucky. It wasn't necessarily a shift thing, because again, he didn't have like a huge difference in wOBA versus the shift or not versus the shift. But look at K rate was around 20% each of the last 2 years. 10.4% walk rate last year. Zone contact was above league average. You know, doesn't his whiff rate is better than league average. Chase rate's better than league average. Like, this should not be a 219 hitter. So I do agree. I like Rowdy a good amount this year. Like, he can just pound the piss out of the ball. We've seen that, and he's a better pure hitter than he was given credit for. And that BABIP definitely played in. So yeah, I think you can see him get up to like 250 or so this year with 30 plus bombs, flirt with 100 RBI. Yeah, he's definitely a good target.
Yeah, I definitely like him as well. And just looking at his numbers the past, you know, since he's been in the league, really, he doesn't strike out a terrible amount. I mean, he's usually less than one at bat or whatever, or one per game. Sorry. I mean, that's the only thing that worries me about him is the at-bats. I think he'll get a decent enough amount, but I think that he's more of a fringe guy in that sense. So that's the only thing that worries me about him, but I don't believe that 219 for a second, because he had 209 in 2021 with Toronto and then jumped all the way up to 274. And it was basically five more games, 18 more at bats. So not a big difference there. It just was position and you know, where he was. So
yeah. The other problem is going to be that lineup isn't going to be great. So maybe some of the counting stats aren't there, but that's why he's going a little later, but he's still going to be a great player to take a little later. But all right, let's finish things off here, man. With our favorite late round players in this position here. So, you know, we kind of mentioned Tellez just now and he's kind of late, but let's go a little later than that. Even what you got, Eric?
So there's a few I look at, you know, a little bit later than him, Seth Brown, kind of like a 25 and 10 guys, which you'd get out of Oakland, but I think he's a solid target there. I think Tristan Casas in Boston is going to have a pretty good year. The OBP skills are there. Solid hitter, 260, 270 type of hitter. I think he can be 25-plus home runs this year. He's going to get a chance to play every day. So he's a guy I've been scooping up a good amount as well. Then even a guy like a Will Myers, who, you know, he's had his moments in the past, but the last couple of years haven't been the greatest. He's had some injuries, and when he's been on the field, performance hasn't been, you know, the greatest, or at least what we were expecting from him a few years ago, but he's now in Cincinnati, and that's very exciting. That is I think the most hitter friendly park in baseball, even ahead of Coors Field. So if he's getting everyday run at first base and in the outfield as well, probably, you know, that's not a great lineup, so he'll probably hit near the middle of that lineup somewhere. I think you can get a nice little bounce back year from Will Myers this year too, with some dual eligibility on top of it. So he's another kind of like a late round dart throw where, you know, he's done it before. He's had some good seasons, so you know he can do it. And now he's in a great park to bounce back in. So Will Myers is a guy I like a lot too.
No, that's a good one. AJ, you got somebody?
Yeah, I've got a couple of guys here. I'm just trying to pull their stats up. I mean, definitely later target. And going in the same discussion with the dual eligibility, there is Yandy Diaz. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a sucker for this guy, but he's just always, every time I've had him on a team, I've been on his hot streak for whatever reason. So, you know, he's not killing it in RBI numbers. You know, he's not killing it in homers, but he's just somebody, like I said, that for me, I've lucked out when I've had him. He doesn't get a ton of at bats either, and a lot of that's injury related, so obviously that's a worry, but
average has always been pretty solid aside from 21. You know, he had a bit of a down year there, but I don't know. I like Diaz. I don't know. Who you got?
So I had one listed, but I want to just mention real quick, Jared Walsh. I think he's going to be in for a big bounce back season. I think, you know, especially if that Angels offense, including himself, can stay healthy.
Yeah.
There's no way he should be all the way down at like first base 35 right now in ADP. But the guy that I really like, as somebody who I think is really going to propel themselves this year is Spencer Torkelson, the Tigers. You know, this was a huge prospect coming into last season. And, you know, he was being drafted in redraft leagues and, you know, just didn't really pan out. But, I mean, it was, again, the Tigers not doing great things last year. He, you know, on and off the field himself, struggled, you know, hitting the ball last year. But, you know, again, like didn't strike out like an extraordinarily amount, you know, not like 30-35% like we see some of these first basemen who come up and just like absolutely struggle. His walk rate went down from the minors to the majors, but you know, that's to be expected. You know, things just I think we're gonna see some of that, you know, medium hard hit rate go to, you know, or medium hits to hard hits, and you know, his exit velocity can go up and things like that. And, you know, I just feel like he's going to put it together. Like the pedigree was not being talked about so much before last year, especially in the power department where, you know, he's got a 70 raw power rating, right? You know, it's going to show up. He's only 23. The fact that he has just plummeted down the ADP is shocking, and he's probably somebody that I'm going to have as a corner infielder or at least at the back end of my bench in a lot of leagues if he stays around this level throughout draft season, because I just feel like he's going to put it together. So
he started to, like, you look at when he got recalled back in early September, like the barrel rate was pretty good. I think the EV was run 93 miles an hour. Hard hit rate was like 51 or something like that. So it's small sample size for sure, but you saw, you know, maybe something clicked for him when he gets sent down and then got brought back up late in the season. So maybe I think he's a guy that if he hits well in spring training, you'll see the ADP rise a good amount. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So get him while you can, because I feel like it's going to happen. He also feels like one of those guys where, even if he does suck in the majors, he's going to be like a spring training darling. I mean, we've seen a lot of those guys, right?
I can see that, yeah.
Who knows? So get him while you can, cheap. But all right, Eric, that is it for our catcher and first base preview. I want to thank you for coming on to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. But let everybody know where they can find your stuff this coming season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun. I loved catcher spot and first base too. So appreciate you guys having me on. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at EricCross04, my written work at FTN Fantasy, at RotoBaller now as well. Got my debut article talking about catcher, ADP, targets, and avoids, which is actually very fitting for this show. That came out earlier this week, so check that out. And obviously I got my Patreon, which is patreon.com/ToolshedFantasy. All my rankings are over there now, a lot of other fun stuff. So check that out. And, of course, the Toolshed podcast with my good friend Chris Clegg. We were doing at least 2 episodes a week right now, maybe 3 when we can fit it in. So, yeah, a lot of fun stuff. This is always a exciting time of year with baseball finally going. People are not talking about football anymore. The focus is all on baseball right now, so I love it. So, yeah, it's a fun time of year.
I mean, we can talk about football if AJ really wants to.
Nope.
I don't know. He's an Eagles fan.
I know.
Nope. We're done.
I'm a Patriots fan, and Tom Brady just retired, so I'm like, eh, whatever.
Nah, I want to poke fun at AJ just a little bit because he's an Eagles fan, but it's okay.
You can't do it too much, man. Philadelphia has taken too much loss this year.
There's never Philadelphia way to do things, to get to championship games and just lose.
It's a shame. All right, anyway. Thank you, Eric, for coming on, man. I had a blast talking with you. It's the first time on our show, so we'll have to do it again, though. This was a good time.
For sure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Thanks, man. See you later. Have a good night.
See ya.
All right, AJ. Sorry, I finally had to pull. He planted the seed with the football, so I had to take it. Sorry.
Yep.
All right, man. So that is it. Next week, if I had the notes up, I don't know where they just went. Oh, there they are. So next week we are doing second base, because second base has a lot more to talk about. Actually, second, we're doing second and base third. And third. Still, there's a lot more to talk about there. This might be a little bit longer of a show, but we're bringing on our good friend Howard Bender from Fantasy Alarm to talk about those positions, so that'll be a fun one. It always is. Have a good time talking with Howard. But again, hit that subscribe button, hit those like buttons, leave those comments, those 5 stars, wherever you're listening and watching. We appreciate it. And again, become a member, guys. It is worth it. Trust me. Get those award-winning rankings. Get those cheat sheets. And join us on Discord. We actually have a free Discord. Check out Fantasy Six Pack Twitter or mine for the link. But there are member-only channels as well. So we've got some free channels in there, so you can come and talk with us. But member-only channels is where it's really at. You're going to get our AMAs. You're going to talk about some of the DFS and the betting picks that we have every day from our experts there that do that. But that is it for the show. And we will see you all next week. Peace.